Philo Torah Zoom Shiur for Yom Revi'i, Wednesday, the 25th day of Sivan 5786, corresponding to June 10th. Yeah. Tehillim. Tehillim Kuf, Mizmor Latoda, Hariu Ladonai Kol Haaretz, Ivdu et Adonai Besimcha, Ba'ul Anav Birnana, Du Ki Adonai Hu Elohim, Uasanu Velo Anachnu Amo Vitzon Marito, Ba'ul Sha'arav Betoda, Chatzerotav Betehila, Hodu Lo Boruchu Shemo, Kitov Adonai Leolam Chasto, Va'ador Vador Emunato. Mark, Kuf Kaf Aleph.
Lama Alos, Sinai El Harim, Mayan Yavo Ezri, Ezrima Im Adonai, Ose, Shamayan Vares, Avisain Lamo Zaglef, Ayanum Shomerefa, Hine Loyan Veloisan, Shomer Yisrael, Adonai Shomerefa, Adonai Silacha, Ayajiminefa, Yomam Hashemesh Loyakeka, Viareacha Laila. Adonai Ismor Hamiko Ra Ismor Esnaf Shefa Adonai Ishmor Sesefa Vuecha Me Atravi Ad Olaams
Kuf Lamed Shir Hama Alot Mima Amakim Kraticha Adonai Adonai Shima Vekoli Tehiena Aznecha Kashuvot Lekol Tachanunai Ima No Tishmor Yah Adonai Mia Amod Ki Imecha Hasilicha Lema Antivarei Kiviti Adonai Kivata Nafshi Velidvaro Hochalti Nafshi Ladonai Mishomerim Laboker Shomerim Laboker Yachel Yisrael El Adonai Ki Im Adonai HaChesed Vaharbe Imo Fedut Vehu Yifde Et Yisrael Mikol Avonotav. Hey David, what do you do? Time it to come in after I start or something? Don't answer. Mark. Mark?
He's on mute.
Okay, go ahead, David. Take over.
Mishabach of Sin Rami Saviak of Yverakas Kailates Fagan Ali Shavas, Ache Kohos Abitachon, Homdim Amishmar Sain of Arelohenu, Balochum and Badenu. Minavanon, Vadmin Bamitraim, Minayamagata, Lugara, Homokum Shahain by Abasha, Babu Vayam. Yitain Adonais Oyveinu Akonim Olenu Nigafim Uf Nehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yishma V'yatzilas Chayelin Mikol Tzor V'tzuko Mikol Nego Machla Yishlach Bracha V'atzlacha V'chom Maase Yedehem Yaber Sanenu Tachtehem V'yatrein Mechese Yishua V'atavet Nitzachon V'guyim Bahem HaKosuf Kilan Rai Eloheichem Ha'olechim Ochem Li Lachem Lachem Im Oyveichem Loshia Aschem V'nomar Amen.
Amen. Together, Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael,
Yitzurim
Batzara Vashivya, Ha'omedim Bein Bayam, Bein Bayabasha, Bein Ba'avir, Hamakom Yirachem Aleihem, V'yotziyem Mitzara Lirvacha, Umeafela Leora, Umishibud Legeula, Hashta Ba'agala Uvizman Kariv, V'nomar Amen. Before I continue, I would like to introduce you to the new kid on the block. With a smile, that's Donna. Donna Goldstein was a student of mine 49 years ago, and maybe 50 also. And she joins Mark as former YCQ students in this Zoom shiur. I always get a kick out of the fact that I have new people and old people, but the old people are not as old as the new people. Figure that one out, and glad to have you all. Just for your information, for anyone who hasn't been around all the time, this started at Susan's initiative in COVID, where she said, just because, you know, we can't continue a shiur at the Israel Center itself, can we do it on Zoom? I don't know why I didn't think of it, but she did, and we ended up with an international shiur, people from Brooklyn, New Jersey, Boca Raton, and now Something Isles Beach.
Sunny Isles
Sandy
Beach.
Isle Beach. Mark, do you know where that is?
I thought you were joking about the British Isles. I thought you were having a joke there.
Yeah.
No, I don't live in British Isles. I live in
Don't
Sunny
forget
Isles.
the oceans in the world. We're all on an island someplace, but
Yeah.
that doesn't count. Hold on a second. Giving a sheer. Okay. I wanted to focus on a couple of the mitzvot in Parshat Korach. If we have time, we'll talk about his rebellion, which is the main part of the parsha, but I want now to look at first Pidyon HaBen. We discussed it on Monday, but I want to add a few things, including a interesting trivia question, which you could ask people, and unless they already know it, they're going to get it wrong, but we'll get there. Pidyon HaBen, redemption of a firstborn. Let's go back to the book of Bereshit. In the book of Bereshit, there was already the issue of a bechor, not with kedusha, just with a prominence in the family, which in the case of Yaakov and Esav, there was the purchase of the bechorah and the deception to get the bracha that Yitzchak thought he was giving to his bechor. And earlier than that, you had the issue with Yishmael and Yitzchak, and Yosef was not the Bechor. So Bereshit is a good set of stories to say nothing super special about a Bechor. Look at how the main figures were all not Bechorim, and that includes Moshe Rabbeinu coming into the book of Shemot. And Aharon, his older brother, the Torah seems to go out of the way to say that at one point Moshe was 80 years old and Aharon was 83 years old, emphasizing that Aharon was older, but the leadership went to Moshe. Then came Makat Bechorot, which introduced different kinds of Kedusha to a Bechor. In the case of a human being, the language in the Torah is not firstborn or Bechor. The language is Peter Rechem Imo, the first issue of his mother's womb. And that's why the halachot of Pidyon HaBen, the details, include, well, he's a firstborn, but he doesn't get a Pidyon HaBen because of this technicality or that technicality. For example, a cesarean delivery. I mentioned that on Monday also. The term Yotzei Dofen literally came from a baby coming out of the wall of the mother's abdomen rather than from the womb. And such a child, even though it's her firstborn, and all other conditions would be met, is not, does not get a Pidyon HaBen, and is not only doesn't get a Pidyon HaBen, but is not required to get a Pidyon HaBen. I don't know if that's clear, but you'll see why I'm mentioning that. What happens in a situation, this I'm jumping to a further detail. What happens in a situation where a couple have a firstborn boy who is technically not a bechor from his mother because of something that family and friends don't know about, like a miscarriage earlier, which the couple decided to keep private and not share it with their family and friends. So here, she's pregnant, she gives birth to a boy, Mazel tov, Mazel tov, when's the Brit, when's the Pidyon? Is there such a thing as a pretend Pidyon for a situation where it could be embarrassing? And it's not just a previous miscarriage. It could be that a woman was married before, and they don't want to make that public either. And she had a child or something like that. So it's a very touchy subject because you're playing around with a mitzvah, and technically, if you avoid making a bracha at the pidyon, which isn't really a pidyon, that would be helpful. If you notify the Kohen that you're going through the motions of a pidyon haben to avoid an embarrassment or revealing of a privacy, a secret that they don't want to reveal, then maybe you would get halachic sanction to invite people, have a party, and hope that nobody notices that no bracha was said. Because we're talking about the bracha, Asher Kiddushanu b'mitzvotav tzivonu al pidyon haben, and the bracha of Shechiyonu v'kiyomonu v'hagiyonu l'zman hazeh. So that's an interesting question, and it's very individual.
So, Phil, if I may interrupt, there's a known story with Rav Ovadia Yosef, exactly along these lines, of a woman who hadn't, I think she hadn't even told her husband that she'd had a previous relationship and a pregnancy as a young woman, not married. And it was supposed to be a pidyon, and the husband was very, very excited about it. And she had a problem that she didn't want to embarrass herself or him. And Rav Ovadia told them they could go ahead and even say the bracha, if I remember correctly.
That's interesting because, if I have to admit it, ChatGPT, Rabbi ChatGPT, disagreed with that one. But it's interesting. There's a halachic hotline for Shaylot around the world with phone numbers for Israel, United Kingdom, United States, and a few other places. And I wanted to check something or double check something with it. I was a little disappointed that I got beautiful music on hold. Lovely song, one of my favorites, Bilavavi Mishkanevna, and I went through the whole song and went to the next song as I'm waiting, for the 24/6, they call it, hotline. And then I called back and they said, dial or click on one for this, two for that, three, four, five, six, seven. If you tried one and you haven't been answered, press on eight, and I got more music. So that was nice. So what I wanted to ask them, oh no. So the reason I'm telling you this is press one for a regular Shaila, press two to ask a Shaila of a Sfardi Rav, and then three, four, five, six, and seven were specific areas of halacha. Like one was kashrut and another one was tarat ha-mishpacha and things like that. So I didn't get an answer for there, but we'll take Rochelle's anecdote or whatever you want to call it as an interesting point. And that's even, I was thinking only when the couple themselves knew the situation, but they didn't want their family to know. But here's a situation where a woman doesn't even want her husband to know. So that's.
Right, not very comfortable for anybody, I
No,
imagine.
no. So that's very interesting. Okay, so let's back up a little. So,
Wouldn't that be a problem with the Kiddushin if he doesn't know she's had a previous relationship?
probably if he wants to push it, he could claim mekach ta'ut. Mekach ta'ut means that we entered into a contractual situation under misleading information. And but
Thing
if
is, so far he still doesn't know about it, so he can't even claim from it, I
right.
suppose.
Right. So the question is if
The
either party learns of the fact.
Kesuvah says Betula, Basula.
Yeah, I don't think so technically they might need to rewrite the ketuvah, but that's not a crucial thing. Question is whether the marriage is a marriage. I mean, I know of one situation where the husband did not tell the wife that he had an extremely high improbability, I think you have to say it the other way, a very, very low probability of being able to conceive. And he was ordered to give her a get because after she found out, 10, 15 years into their marriage, she felt that she wanted another chance at having a child. And the guy lost his passport, and the police got involved, and he was put in jail for a while. He gave her the get, but that's a whole other story. So there are situations. Let's go back to normal. Normal is at after 30 days when a baby has the chazaka, the assumption that he is viable during 30 days. It's not known whether he will survive. And Pidyon HaBen was only after 30 days, usually the 31st day. And there's an issue also of how do I know the Kohen that I want to use for Pidyon HaBen is really a Kohen? We don't have what do you call it, genealogical lineage, what do you call it, guaranteed or certified. And there have been famous individuals in the past, Gedolim, who through they were Bechor, not a Kohen, and they would seek out different Kohanim during their lifetime and redeem themselves with a Tanai. If the Kohen that I was first redeemed with when I was a month old was a legitimate Kohen, then here, I'm giving you a gift of 5 silver coins. And if not, let this be the pidyon. Now, the normal person doesn't have to do that. You take someone who is reputed to be a Kohen, known in the community to be a Kohen, and you could rely on that. There are people in Israel who seek out a particular family of Kohanim who supposedly have genealogy records that go back further than the average person to testify that they were Kohanim. But that's an offbeat kind of thing. I had a situation once in Queens where the grandfather of a kid, no, actually, the story was a friend of mine called me and told me the following. The grandfather of a Bechor wanted to know how he could arrange a Pidyon HaBen for his grandson because his son, father of the boy, didn't want to be bothered, wasn't religious, and didn't care. So the grandfather finally got the son to agree. The condition that the son imposed that it's not going to be a pain in the neck for me. Okay. So my friend calls me to see what I could arrange in my neighborhood because that's where the son and the newborn lived. Now, I'm not a Kohen. So I called at the time Rabbi Brander, the principal of the school. He wasn't available. So, oh no. Okay, it's a long time ago, so I'm not remembering the story in proper order. So I arranged for a Kohen, for a place, for some refreshments, and just informed the grandfather and his son that there will be a Pidyon HaBen on a certain day there. So the kid comes, not the kid, the son of the father of the baby. And I had told him on the phone about 5 silver coins. And at the time in the States, the most common thing was $5 silver, original silver dollars, which are worth a lot more than $5. And he comes to the Pidyon. And he says, I have the 5 silver coins. I borrowed, underline the word, I borrowed them from a friend, and I have to return it to him tomorrow. So I said, well, that's not really good because they have to belong to you in order for you to use them to redeem your son. Can you call him and get them to you as a gift, knowing that you'll return it to him tomorrow? So he says, no, he's out of town and it can't be reached. So that's when I called up Rabbi Brander and found out from him, no, I can't use those 5 silver coins. I didn't have 5 silver coins. Rabbi Brander did because he's a Kohen and he has done a lot of pidyon, so he always has them available. But he said you could take something that the guy owns made of silver, not silver plate, but sterling silver, 925 silver, whatever, and use that provided it has the value of the 5 silver shkalim that you're supposed to use. Now, just for show and tell, I went to my closet and I found these 2 silver bechers and I weighed them and they weigh less than 100 grams. So I added this silver spoon and together this amount of silver would be valid for a pidyon haben. Doesn't have to be coins. So I just wanted to show you that. The guy had a punch bowl that was silver and it was heavy enough. And we ended up getting the coins from Rabbi Brander anyway. But it was an interesting thing because it introduced me to the idea that it's silver. There are people I know of in Israel who don't use coins, don't use any objects made of silver. They use a blob of silver. They go to a silversmith, they get a raw blob, can't say anything else, of silver, minimum of 100 grams, which is 20 grams per original silver shekel. And that's where we get the half shekel at Purim time, being 10 grams approximately of silver. You look up the price of silver in today's market, and then you know how much it has to be worth, and you could do pidyon that way. Now, I also mentioned on Monday, as most people know, if the father, let's look at grandfathers, if the grandfather of either side is a Kohen or a Levi, there is no Pidyon HaBen. I had mentioned being curious about the statistics on it. According to the internet, it came up with between 5 and 10% of births result in a Pidyon HaBen. It seems like a little too high, but there are so many factors that are involved. But now I want to focus on Kohen Levi and introduce you to a weird situation. A bat Kohen or a Kohen who has a bechor, there's no pidyon haben. A Levi or a bat Levi, also there's no pidyon haben. First question, not related to Kohen and Levi, what if a woman has a child, her first, and it's a boy, and the father of the child is not Jewish? Is there still a pidyon haben? The answer is yes. The woman is Jewish. This baby is the first issue of her womb. The child is obligated to have a pidyon haben. However, his father, a goy, has no obligation to redeem him. He can't. And therefore, the question is, who has the obligation of pidyon haben? Does it devolve on the mother? Does it devolve on the mother's father if he's still around? And that's the same question of how you call a kid to the Torah if his mother is Jewish and his father is not Jewish. So you don't say, Ya'amod Shimon ben Christopher. You use the mother's name or you use the maternal grandfather's name, and that's how you call them to the Torah. But anyway, in case of Pidyon, bottom line is, if nobody redeems him, and this goes to anybody who's not redeemed, who's supposed to be, when he reaches the age of mitzvot, he has the obligation of doing it for himself. When I was at YU, it was very common, I can't say very common, it was not very rare that a boy was a Baal Tshuva, came to Yeshiva University, learned about Pidyon HaBen, called home and asked his parents if he ever had Pidyon HaBen. Sometimes it was not uncommon that a kid would say, "My father says I had a brit, but he doesn't remember anything about a Pidyon HaBen." So there were a number of self Pidyon HaBens, and you don't say Al Pidyon HaBen, you say Lifdot Oti or something like that. So weird bracha, I haven't reviewed where it is. And kids redeemed themselves. It's a lot less painful than getting yourself circumcised when you're 20 years old, but has to be done. So they had that.
Can
Now,
I say something?
yes.
I'm sorry, I don't see my picture there. I tried to picture me.
Okay, I remember what you look like, and if the others don't, then.
So my husband did a Pidyon HaBen for himself.
At what
He
age?
was adopted. He was adopted as a baby. And another day, I can give you all the whole long, very fascinating story. But anyway, he found out that his biological mother is Jewish. The father was not. They were high school sweethearts. But he didn't have enough information to know whether he was, she was a Bat Cohen or Lavi or C-section, whatever. And then later, he found out a few years ago, since we're in touch with a biological half-sister of his, we got the information that he is Chayav Pidyon HaBen. So we asked our Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, what he should do, and he said, "Don't delay. This is a mitzvah. You find out you can do it. You can do it." And so we were having Thanksgiving dinner with, family and friends a few years ago, and our friend Moshe Matitya is a Cohen, and he did a Pidyon HaBen for him. It was quite beautiful.
Yeah, it sounds nice.
Yeah.
It's almost as if, why should you waste it on a kid that's 1 month old who won't remember his pidyon?
Yes, we did. It was a party, and the rabbi gave us this little booklet, like for all like marriage ceremonies and for a bunch of unusual things. And one is if you have to poda yourself.
Yep, very nice.
Thank you.
Regards to Tom.
There I am. Thank you.
Okay. So there's that story. So here's an interesting trivia thing. A Bat Kohen or a Bat Levi has a firstborn child to a non-Jew. Not just a regular Yisrael, but we're talking about a Bat Kohen or a Bat Levi. What's the status of the kid having a Pidyon HaBen or not? And I was surprised when I first learned this that the Bat Levi, who gives birth to a firstborn from a non-Jewish man, retains whatever there is of Leviyah in her that exempts the kid from a pidyon. But a Bat Kohen loses it. A Bat Kohen who has relations with a goy, it does not retain the status of Bat Kohen to exempt her son from a pidyon, and he would have to have a pidyon. There's no big deal about it, but these are all kind of things that fine-tune the issue. And I think that particular question is one that will stump people. You ask them, hypothetically, if a Bat Kohen has a firstborn son from a non-Jew, does the kid get a pidyon or not? Now, if that's a giveaway, because you wouldn't be asking unless it was weird, So throw in the levy in there, and then it really gets confusing. Okay. Comments or questions before we move on to the next bechor, the one of the cow, goat, and sheep, like I mentioned on Monday also, but I want to give you a little bit more detail, because that's in the Parsha too. Not counted among Taryag, it's counted elsewhere, but it's one of the types of bechor. So here's the situation. A person owns a cow. The cow is pregnant for her first time and delivers a male calf. The moment that calf comes out into the air of the world is called Avir HaOlam. He is Kodesh, sacred. The owner has to take care of the calf for 50 days, 50, feeding it, veterinary visit, whatever you need. And after 50 days, gives the calf as a gift, one of the 24 gifts of the kahuna, to the kohen of his choice. The kohen is obligated, it depends. If the animal remains blemish free, then the kohen, any time during the calf's first year of life, has to bring it to the Beit HaMikdash and offer it as a korban, unimaginatively called bechor. I always sometimes want them to have special names, what do you call a bechor of an animal who's a korban? Bechor. Doesn't sound nice. Doesn't sound exciting. It's just like also when I collect Haggadot, most of them will say Haggadah Shel Pesach. The ones that name it something nice, those are the, to me, the special ones. Anyway, if the animal is blemished, that it makes it invalid as a korban, it remains the property of the kohen to do whatever he wants with it. He could raise it, he could sell it, he could barbecue it, he can do anything he wants with it. It's his free and clear. If it is fit for the mizbeach, then he has to bring it as a korban, which gets him the meat, which is now sacred, except what goes on the altar. He takes it home and he eats it with his family, but he has to be tahor and things like that. So he doesn't lose for it. It's just much easier if it's blemished. But there's a warning here. It is forbidden to intentionally blemish a sacred animal in order to invalidate it. The Gemara has a horrifying story of Second Beit HaMikdash time. Kohen, who didn't care, he had two firstborn calves that were given to him, blemish free, and the Gemara says he tied their tails together and sent them in opposite directions in order to create an invalidating blemish that the animal could be his without having to bring it to the Beit HaMikdash. So at that point, the Sanhedrin issued a decree, and that is any sacred animal that a person claims is blemished. Look at it. It has a blemish that invalidates it to a korban. This applies to bechor, but it also applies to other sacred animals. Has to be certified that the blemish happened naturally. Now, sometimes you could do that, and sometimes you can't. I'll give you an extreme example, which is always a weird thing to think about. If a calf is born with one blue eye and one green eye, that is considered an invalidating blemish for a korban. And that's not something that you could fake. I'm not talking about putting contact lenses on her or something. So, but the normal situation is it's a blemish that happens. If a calf is born with five legs or three legs, I mean, that's obvious. But if it has an injury which could have been inflicted, then they issued a gezeira against using that animal for your own purpose because they wanted to avoid people doing this terrible thing about inflicting a blemish on a sacred animal, which you're not allowed to do. Okay. Now comes, which again, the first time I learned this was a surprise, and that is the mitzvah of Bechor applies today. In other words, if I have a cow, I own it, it gives birth to a male firstborn, I have to raise it for 50 days today and the next 50 days. Then give it to a Kohen as a gift. And this time, the Kohen is not going to smile and say, thank you very much. He's not going to want to take it. Halachically, by the way, he's obligated to take it because it's a mitzvah of matnat kohuna. I have a mitzvah to give. He has a mitzvah to take. But it's thanks, but no thanks. You're not doing me a favor. Because if the animal is blemish free, he has to bring it to the Beit HaMikdash and offer it as a korban bechor. But we don't have a mizbeach, we don't have a Beit HaMikdash currently. We don't know when and we're going to get one. So he has to raise that animal for its entire life, feeding it, grooming it, protecting it, never benefiting from it. So let's say if it's a sheep, a lamb that grew into a sheep and it has wool, when it needs for its benefit to be sheared, you take the wool and you have to bury it. You can't even use it to make tzitzis. Therefore, the Shulchan Aruch says, true, this is a mitzvah. Please don't do it. Get out of it. And that I've always felt is a very poignant concept that the Shulchan Aruch should have to say, instead of here's a mitzvah, this is how you should do it, here's a mitzvah, it applies today, please get out of it. And they give you the advice of how to get out of it, which is while it's still pregnant, does not work after the birth, while it's still pregnant, you go to a non-Jew and you say, I want to sell you a small portion of the cow that I own. Let's say, give me a shekel for a tenth of a percent of the cow. Now the cow is jointly owned by a Jew and a non-Jew. The birth, there's no kedusha. Because that's only, and it's based on psukim, it's only when it is totally owned by a Jew. And then after the birth, when there's no kedushin, you keep the animal and do whatever, anything you want with it. You go back to the goy if you want, and you buy his portion back so it becomes yours again. Next birth doesn't have any problem. It's only that first birth. Now, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, when you can bring it as a korban, the trick as to how to get out of it will still work, but you're not supposed to use it. Because you're removing the potential of doing a very special mitzvah. Susan.
Are there any other mitzvot in the Torah that we're advised not to do?
The only, look, it goes like this. There are mitzvot that applied in the time of the Beit HaMikdash and will apply in the time of the next Beit HaMikdash, which are suspended. They don't exist now. And sometimes you have rabbinic come along saying, do it anyway, like Shemitah, you know, things like that. But the two examples that I'm aware of are Bechor and Ma'aser Behemah, the tenth of one's animals. I don't know of any others that a person is advised There are too many complications. In fact, the chapter after the discussion of how to get out of the mitzvah of the kedusha of a bechor is followed by the third kind of bechor, that of a donkey, which is not related to the Beit HaMikdash at all, was not related to being Kodesh, but must be redeemed. And the Shulchan Aruch has to say, if you read the last chapter where we told you how to get out of the mitzvah of Bechor, I have to tell you, it'll work for a donkey. Please don't do it. It's that kind of thing. So let's say, lamasa, halacha lamaisa, if a person raises donkeys, and that's his business, and maybe he's not too religious and he doesn't care, then he can legitimately, I don't know if that's the right word, it won't be invalid if he brings a non-Jew into a token partnership with him in order to avoid having to do pidyon peter chamor, because it's going to cost him the value of a sheep. That can't be very cheap. So if he says, look, 350 shekel, I don't know, 500 shekel for a sheep, why should I have to spend that if just to do the mitzvah? Again, we're talking about different people, and there's some people who care, and some people who say, oh, what a wonderful opportunity this is to do a mitzvah. There's actually an organization in Israel which translates to the Organization for the Performance of Mitzvot That Are Rarely Performed. So they don't deal with Lulav and Esrog. They deal with this. And I've never been to one. I've seen videos of it, of a Pidyon Peter Chamor, where you don't have to do this, but the people did it. They had a band playing music. They dress up the little donkey in cute outfit, and there's a kohen, there's a refreshments table for after the pidyon peter chamor, there's a bracha for it, and you give the sheep or the value of a sheep. You don't even have to have the animal itself. You could say market price. The lowest price of a sheep is 250 shekel. So you give the kohen 250 shekel, you make a bracha, and the donkey is yours free and clear. Now I have to add also one thing which is not so pleasant to discuss. The Torah, when it comes to bechor of a domesticated farm animal, the kosher ones, cow, goat, and sheep, forbids redeeming. You must follow through with the kedusha. When it comes to human, you must redeem. I mentioned on Monday there are guys that joke around at a pidyon just to make the mood light. When the kohen formally says, which do you prefer, these five silver coins or your firstborn son? And I've seen it where a guy will say, wait, let me think. That's a joke, because you're not allowed, that's not a real choice. You must redeem the kid, the father. And if not, then the kid has to redeem himself when he gets of age. And when it comes to Peter Chamor, there's an alternative. You either redeem it or you destroy it. Picture a guy who says, I don't feel like spending 350 shekel to do Pidyon Peter Chamor. I have plenty of donkeys. My other female donkeys have given birth in the past, so when the babies are born, I have enough. I don't need it. So the Torah provides the alternative, as gruesome as it sounds, of destroying the animal, the baby donkey. Now, the halacha says, please, please do it the right way and avoid having to do that. But the other way to get out of it without having to destroy the baby donkey is to make a partnership with a non-Jew, even token, while the mother is still pregnant. And then the firstborn baby donkey doesn't have any requirement of pidyon. But the Shulchan Aruch says today, please don't do that because you're avoiding a mitzvah. Now back to Susan's question. My mind, part of it is concentrating on what I'm saying, but there's a little part in the back that I'm running through the files to see if I could remember another example of that, where you're better off not doing a mitzvah or getting out of it some way. And actually I'm thinking of a few different things. Maybe the protective fence around a roof. I have a choice. I could make my roof with a steepled roof where people can't go on it, and then I don't have to worry about the makeh. Or I could have a flat roof that's inhabitable, and then I do have to worry about that. Now, again, depending on who you are, I mean, there are a lot of people, hopefully, who would love to do a mitzvah if they could. And the fact that a technicality exempts them is disappointing to them. But then there are plenty of Jews who say, I'm glad I found that technicality. I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to do that, whatever. So, not the same, but I was thinking of mezuzah. You have places in your home that definitely need a mezuzah. You have doorposts that definitely don't get a mezuzah, like a bathroom. But in every home, you have some place where it's a judgment call. You called up your rabbi, you took pictures, you sent them to him, and you say, do I need a mezuzah on this particular doorpost? Because on the right-hand side, it's a straight wall, and only on the left-hand side is it little like a doorpost, or it doesn't have a cross beam, it goes to the ceiling. Okay, so he could say no mezuzah is required. If you put one up, that's good too, but don't make a bracha. Now, you have a very practical issue, which not everybody will behave the same way. There are some people who love the opportunity to do a mitzvah or even a maybe mitzvah. So they'll spend the money on a mezuzah and they'll put it up. Another person will say, hey, I asked the Rav, he says probably doesn't need a mezuzah, so I'm not going to bother. It's a matter of attitude. And I'm sure I will come up before next time with a couple of other examples of where you could, I don't know if this, maybe. I'll throw this out. We in Israel have access in the normal situation of supermarkets and fruit markets to produce that has already been taken care of as far as Trumot and Masrot. And when you have the opportunity, I have just picked them this morning, four ripe apricots from a tree in my mirpeset. And it was an exciting thing to take Trumos and Masros, make brachot, two of them, because it's Lahafrish Trumot and Masrot, and also Maser Sheni. And the apricot is the same apricot, but it tastes, has that extra taste of personal mitzvah rather than bought it and it was done already. So that has a benefit, that has a purpose, and this has a purpose. So I don't know, I'm sort of dancing around that question that Susan asked. But look, back to Tzitzis from the end of last week's Seder, or in the case of David and Mark and Donna and whoever else is not around here is going to hear Parshat Shlach, so we could talk about Tzitzis again. And a guy can, it's really different, but he can claim, like some guys do, that I don't have a four-cornered garment, I don't have to put on tzitzis. And Chazal came along and said, a man shouldn't walk around without tzitzis anytime. And uvda, fact, on the ground, there are guys who are Shomer Shabbos and Kashrut and Daven regularly and everything else, and they don't wear tzitzis under their shirt. They claim it's not comfortable in the summertime, and I don't really have to because. And I remember throughout, being in school and then being a teacher, where obviously you don't wear your tzitzis in a swimming pool, but the question is, do you play basketball wearing that tzitzis? Or do you make yourself more comfortable by taking off your undershirt and your talis katan, putting them on the side, and then just putting your shirt back on and then play the game and then come back? So you want to be, I don't know what the word is. You want to be, well, this is not a subjective, this is not an objective way I'm going to put it. You want to be dedicated to mitzvot, so you undergo a little discomfort in having to wash your undershirt or wash your tzitzis or whatever. But you play ball wearing tzitzis. I remember guys in college who, when they went on a date at night, they would claim nighttime is not the time for tzitzis. And when they would change for the date, they wouldn't put on tzitzis. I grew up with a father who never forced it, but I took his example and I wear my tzitzis all the time. Even if I'm changing at nighttime, where technically I might be able to get out of it because there is a machloket, that's a whole other story, as to whether it is laila, nighttime, that you're exempt from tzitzis, or just kesut laila, a nighttime garment. The example would be a blanket that you want to wrap around yourself because it's chilly and you want to walk around with that. During the daytime, that's a problem for a man. If it's a four-cornered thing that he made into a garment because he's wearing it, it needs tzitzis. All right, so here's another example. A poncho. A poncho has four corners. There are people who had the tailor or somebody sew up the corners, rounding them, so they don't qualify for needing tzitzis. And there are other people who are thrilled to be able to put tzitzis on their poncho. So it's a matter of attitude. But I'll see if I could find, any concrete example of that. There are certain mitzvot where the likelihood of doing them the proper way is low. And therefore, if you could get out of it, get out of it. I use that example of tefillin, because tefillin requires a tremendous vigilance in one's mind of purity of thought and not doing things that are not appropriate if you're wearing these sacred objects called tefillin. So you don't. That's why Chazal were smart enough to say, even though tefillin should be worn all day long, we will leave it just for shacharit in the morning. And think about it, that's 12 hours plus or minus, boiled down to a half an hour to 45 minutes in the morning. And they said that's the smart way in today's world to handle tefillin. Because otherwise, the expression, yatzas choro behefsedo, any benefit that you have for doing the mitzvah all day long is out the window if you disrespect them by lack of purity of thought. And the assumption is that most of us don't have constant, total purity of thought. When you find someone who does, you say, I understand why he's wearing his tefillin all day long. And there are people, but those are very far and few between, few and far between, in that respect. So, bottom line, three kinds of bechor, each one, when it's totally required, has bracha. Pidyon haben, in the case of a human being, the kedusha of a bechor, in the case of a domesticated kosher animal. I say that because a firstborn deer, even though it's kosher to eat, was not fit for the Mizbeach, and there is no Kedusha of the Bechor. And the Peter Chamor. Now you might ask, what's a donkey doing in this whole picture? And specifically a donkey, not a horse, not a cat, not a dog, not a lion, not an elephant, not a zebra, a donkey. And the answer is that if the Kedusha of Bechor, or the special status, we'll call it, of Bechor goes back to Yetziat Mitzrayim, which it does, then donkey, not camel, by the way, donkey was the main beast of burden that got us out of Egypt. And therefore, the Torah specifically commands that a firstborn donkey, dafka a donkey, should be in the picture, even though it's not kodesh and even though it's never offered on the altar. I mean, that's ridiculous to think about it that way, but it's in the picture of Bechor that has a certain status from the events of that last night we were in Egypt. And I hate to, spoil anybody's image of coming out of Egypt on camels, but apparently it was donkeys that took us out. Comments or questions? Now, I don't know about you, but I enjoy topics sometimes that have no practical relevance. I mean, I have three girls. I had a pidyon ben on me before I could remember. And I had three grandsons with pidyon haben, but it's not a daily thing that occupies my mind. But once in a while, to polish up and fine tune and find little interesting side points. Let me finish with that business of a pretend pidyon haben. Rochelle gave the whole story with the Rav Avadya Yosef's allowing even a bracha. That has to be an individual psak. There is no general rule. You're embarrassed that you had a miscarriage, so sometimes they could say, too bad, in a nice way. But this business of it could ruin Shalom Bayis if.
Correct. I think the reason was a Kavod HaBrios or something. I have to look again where I saw it.
That's the way that we call avoiding embarrassment.
Right.
That's why, by the way, if a person, a guy, is wearing tzitzis, it's a little weird to think about that, but he's not, and they become puzzle, and he's in the street, he doesn't have to take them off until he gets home, because covered up briot, assuming that's all he's wearing or whatever. I don't know, whatever. Anyway.
The way I heard that story, which was a couple of weeks ago in the context of Nusso, and you'll see why, was Rav Ovadia used the logic of the Sota, and Hashem allowing his name to be erased for Shalom Bayis between husband and wife, in this instance, allow the bracha of ostensibly the bracha of Atala of the pidyon event. There was more to it than that, but that was the context of Nusso at the time.
By the way, I don't know how kosher this is, but if you usually a bracha levatala happens and then you realize it was levatala. But if you purposely say it, it's possible to have kavanah that this should not qualify as a bracha. And then what you're doing is reciting it. Yes, you use God's name, but using his name not in a bracha levatala is not as problematic as a bracha levatala. So that would be an interesting thing. But you see what I saved by not having a bechor? All of this. Although, cost me plenty. Rabbi Nachman Kahana was the Kohen for one of my grandsons' pidyon, and I bought a set of the coins to give my son-in-law as a gift so that he will be able to redeem. And a lot of Kohanim, without having to be asked, will usually give the coins they receive in Pidyon HaBen back to the family. So Rabbi Kahana made it clear to me, not because he's looking to make money, but he wants to make sure that you don't think it's a game, that you get 5 coins, you give it to the Kohen, ha ha ha, and he gives them back as a gift. So what'd you do? He says, I keep them. And if you want to buy them back from me, you don't have to pay me what they cost in the Israel mint and metal store, but you have to pay the value of 5 silver coins worth of silver. So I ended up not only spending, I don't remember what it was, 900 shekel on the coins, and another 300 or 400 on buying them back so that I could give them to the family to save. Okay, that's the story.